Good morning and welcome to How You Do Anything is How You Do Everything. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Ashwini.
We had a series of assignments over the weekend, and here they are. So on Friday, what are you like when you are lonely? Record and listen. On Saturday, what do you do to be good to someone or take care of someone? Record and listen. Will you do these things for you on Sunday? So here is our first caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Ashwini. This is Debbie from Minnesota.
Hey, Debbie.
Hey, Debbie.
Hi. Well, I'm happy to be on the call.
Happy to hear your voice. You kind of sounds like you weren't expecting to be unmuted.
No, I wasn't. but here I am. So.
But here you are. Here we are.
Yeah. So I think you just mentioned three prompts. And the one I think I'll speak about is how I would take care of myself and how I would take care of someone else and would I do that for myself. And I think that what I was thinking about was how, like, my tendency is to project what I like to do for myself onto other people. And that's the way that's how I knee-jerk would tend to care for them, to give them what would be nice for me. But I also am very aware that that's not necessarily what would serve that person. Mm-hmm. At least that might not be what may be interesting for them. So... Mm-hmm. I just kept getting back to that place of the best thing that I can do is, and not that I'm so good at it, but what I would like to do is to really get skilled as I can at tuning in, really calibrating, to use at your words, Ashwini, or getting that frequency where I'm really listening and understanding what they need. And also, like, I think the more I practice that for myself, the more skilled I will actually be at doing that for them, but not presuming that what serves me is the same as what they would like for them.
Yeah. Boy, that's so big, isn't it? I think if we could all really get what you're saying, all of our relationships would just take a giant leap to the happy, because as much as we don't know what takes care of somebody else, nobody else really knows what takes care of us, because we're all spending most of our time projecting. And so we can feel uncared for because we just don't know that somebody else is doing all of these things that they're doing to take care of us, because they don't take care of us. And on our side, the same, right? And so it's people really wanting to do the best for one another and just missing completely. Very sad.
Yeah, a lot of extra effort.
A lot of extra effort and hurt feelings and feeling unloved and misunderstood. And of course, you know, ego will give us a lot of information that says, well, you know, I take such good care of everybody else. I'm always doing for other people, but nobody's doing anything for me because I don't see what they're doing for me.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So that tuning in, getting very subtle, and as you say, starting with ourselves, right? Can we be actually get past ego and past conditioning to tune in to the authentic human being and see, in this case, what would take care of her, and then learn that ability to tune in, to calibrate, to be sensitive. Then we can start applying it in other places.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for me, you know, I can see what gets in the way of doing that for me. I'm sure for everybody it's different. But it's something that when I called in and I spoke to Ashvini one day when you weren't on the call, it's like this, it's kind of like a forcing or a driving or having my own agenda, like a where a hurry starts to build in, like I'm doing too much. My agenda is a little bit too full for the time that I have. I end up forcing or driving, and then I miss the mark, if you will. That's the conditioning that I experience.
Yeah, I'm too busy to be sensitive. I'm too busy to tune in. I've got a lot of urgency.
I'll tune in later.
Right. Yeah, I'll
tune in later. Right. When I finish this, I'll...
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Woo, it's good to see, isn't it?
Good to see, yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Debbie.
Thanks, Sherry. Thanks
Ashley. Debbie. And I bet that all gets solved if we were allowed to communicate.
I suspect that would go a long way, huh?
Yes. And also I project.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going off on a different topic, but so.
Well, I just want to tie those two together, the communicate and project. Because in a relationship, if we can chip away at that ego communication and get to some real communication, then fascinating things come from really trying to understand what somebody else is experiencing, how they see it, what they're projecting, what they're doing.
And I don't know if this is true or not, but it's certainly my experience that if we actually work on the part of the assignment, which is what do you need to be good to yourself, and you actually do it, then relationship is less about getting your needs met through the other person. And so you could truly tune into being present rather than being present from the perspective of taking care of someone else's needs and actually just trying to get your needs met.
Right. Oh, that was a powerful line you threw in there at the end. We had a great discussion at the monastery yesterday about that, getting to that point of realizing that the greatest kindness we can do for ourselves and for anybody else is to be present, right? That's the kind of the big key to the whole thing.
Yeah. Okay,
were you going to say more about projection?
No, I was just going to say the projection is simply the unmet need in you.
Right. So what
if you're projecting from that ego place?
So
it's what Debbie was saying, that I project that the other person needs what I need only because my need is not taken care of.
Wow. That is some subtle stuff, isn't it?
It is indeed.
Yeah. One more on that. So I'm projecting from an unmet need in myself, and then, of course, it doesn't work because it's not what the other person needs. And then I feel rejected because the other person isn't receiving what I'm trying to give, and the whole process is reinforced.
And the fiendish part about it, I think, is what you mentioned. In my universe, I'm doing everything to take care of the other person. And so it is a rejection, even if I'm not conscious that it's not perceived that way by the other person, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Gosh. No wonder there's so much suffering, interpersonal suffering, world suffering.
Mm-hmm. All right, here's our next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Pasha. Can you hear me?
Yes, Pasha, we can.
Great. I'm so excited to be on the call and also having the made the assignment. Sorry, I'm kind of slow.
Yes, not it's twofold, isn't it? We're here all speaking together, and you did the assignment, so it's extra special. Yeah.
So I was looking at the one being lonely, mm-hmm. What surprised me in looking into this question is realization that I am kind of identified with conditioned mind, desperately trying to run away from lonely. So I really have a little experience of being lonely because it immediately gets submerged into lots of conversations and actions and boom, and I'm gone. So,
So not even being sure what the experience of lonely is, because mm-hmm. it's such a trigger to just leap into distraction.
Yes, exactly. Distraction is the key. So it's such a kind of fused together. You know, if lonely, then distraction, and there is so many distractions. There is that it just doesn't give a chance. So I was looking also at what's my experience of being alone, and I like kind of I enjoy being alone. I enjoy to be at visiting monk program where there is opportunities to be alone and connect with nature and just experience being alive. That's not alone I'm talking about. I'm talking about there is some kind of a young, I guess, part of me who was, I guess, maybe had some bad experience of being lonely, not alone. He was mm-hmm. just, he was identified somehow, like, oh, I feel bad, and that's because I'm lonely. And that's
when you paint that picture, Pasha, it sounds like, I project, there's an element of abandoned.
Mm-hmm, yes.
So there's a young person who's having whatever experience and is left without any support or concern mm-hmm. or care or presence.
Yes. And while on the visiting monk a month, he doesn't re-experience that because he is in care, he is in support, he is carried away. So there is no, for me, a reference point to come back and find, well, you know, I've been alone many times, but that kind of glimpses of lonely, they like a knife comes in my life here and there, but it immediately gets thrown into distraction. And later mm-hmm. I find myself like, oh my God, what am I doing? And if I track mm-hmm. back, oh, it started from that pinch of I'm lonely now, mm-hmm. and the wide invitation to conditioning to fill in. So that was a big kind of revelation for me. Oh, there mm-hmm. are these rare moments of lonely or somebody who believes he's lonely, where it's kind of trained to go to conditioned mind. So yep. I'm I'm curious and looking forward to for the next lonely moment to come and talk with that guy and attend and see more clearly what is that going on there.
Yes, yes, because I suspect it, just in the way you describe it, that the presence is going to be the whole thing, because I doubt there's any such experience as lonely.
Yes.
Right? It's just a sensation that got a label that meant get out of here. Yeah.
Oh, right. Right. Uh-huh. Yes. So that's what you just said is brought that image, because the image of lonely is when I was sick in the hospital and waiting for mom visitation hours and looking through the window and trying to recognize in people passing, you know, far away in the sidewalk, you know, which one of them are my mom.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a picture that I think get triggered, and I feel even now the energy is rising when even I'm just talking about it. So yes, that's true. That's my experience, that there is no such experience of lonely when I'm trying to find it. It's not there, but there is this old story that get well played into destruction now.
Yeah, and it's interesting, isn't it? Because what we all need is attention, is presence, right?
Yes.
And so it's a perfect setup for suffering, because there's that little guy in a hospital bed looking out the window, waiting for his mom to come and visit. And the way conditioning has set it up, nobody ever comes for him.
Yes.
Right? As soon as there's a glimpse of him, conditioning says, okay, get some sort of device, go listen, go look at something, go do something, call somebody, talk to somebody. And so he just stays there, abandoned year after year after year. Not anymore, huh?
And now I'm the mom who's coming to visit.
That's right.
I am the dad. And yesterday was a perfect picture of that, of celebrating the dad, and not only through the external people, but also kind of Pasha celebrating the Pasha's dad, and that was also a very fruitful recordings day yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks to practice, I was able to be a dad, and I am able to be a dad for external child, and also I think I'm celebrating also Pasha as a dad for all internal children.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very grateful for practice, and I'm just filled with gratitude. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Pasha, and
thank you.
Happy Father's Day every day.
Thank you. So
bye-bye.
Thanks, Pasha. There was so much in that to celebrate, Cherry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, the process that was laid out in terms of the awareness of the story that triggers a sensation that when we look at doesn't stand up to scrutiny.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was something I read. I think it was Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh who says, loneliness is the absence of the other, but aloneness is the fullness of presence.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There isn't that the missing and the absence is only ever in conscious awareness if we're listening to a story, because you have to be told that something is missing because there's nothing missing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Which is such a good image of what Pasha was describing. That sensation is there, and then the signal is, get out of here. Abandon that person and get into distraction.
Mm-hmm.
Get even further.
Yeah.
from being here.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Mm. Well, here's our next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, good morning. This is Greta.
Hello, Greta.
Hey, Greta.
Hi. Well, I'm doing Q practice as I'm sitting listening. And I could relate to the experiences of the other callers. And what I notice about the alone versus lonely is similar. I enjoy being alone. And I kind of have a lot of that opportunity. But I don't know if I just watch this duality play out, especially in the fall when it's easy to start to feel depressed. And I don't necessarily feel like I want to be with other people, but I get this whole, there's a whole cycle and a conversation that takes over that tells me that there's something wrong with me because I'm alone. So it's taking something that I really enjoy and kind of taking it away from me, turning it into something awful that the only reason I'm like this is because there's something wrong with me.
Wow. Wow. That is a marvelous picture of how fiendish ego is. Right? You actually enjoy being alone. You don't, it's not other people that you necessarily want to be around, and yet both of those things get turned against you as evidence that there's something wrong with you. So you, on every level, right? The fact that you're alone, and that's not a good thing because there should be other people in your life, but you don't want other people necessarily, and so that's a problem. That shows that there's something wrong with you. And then if you're depressed, well, the reason that you're depressed is, and it just piles on. Right, making these connections that don't actually exist.
Just... Sherry, it seems like we lost Greta. Hang on 1 second. Hello?
Hi, you
Greta?
Found me. Yes.
I was
yeah,
lost, but now
I missed
found.
All of that because I dropped it, my phone dropped the call.
Okay, I can do it really quickly. What I was seeing in what you said is how conditioned mind, not just with you, but with all of us, how it puts together things that don't go together and makes connections that don't exist. But it says it over and over and over enough that we assume that it's true because we've heard it so often.
Yes, exactly. And I've had that particular experience really often. You know, every fall it seems like I get dragged down in to this seasonal thing. And then because it's fall, because of whatever, as you say, things that don't have anything to do with each other get put together and just tapped into some childhood experience. Even though I can watch it happening now, I still fall for it. And this year I fell for it to kind of a greater extent than I had. And as soon as the holidays were over, I was fine. So there's this whole big thing that, you know, drama that gets played out about who I am and who I'm not and why and all this stuff. And it kind of like my life gets taken away from me because I'm conditioning.
Not.
I'm sorry?
You're required to be somebody that you're not.
Yeah, oh boy, that is exactly it. Yep. Not I'm required Well, it's from it, to meet the standard, I think, is what you mean, right? So in order to be the right person and do the right thing, I have to fall into these categories or behave in these ways that I don't. And it's curious whether it's that I don't want to or I get so caught up in the story that I'm so uncomfortable already that I certainly don't want to participate or behave in those
ways. Well, and you can't be that way because there's no proof that there's something wrong with you. You know, if you normal people don't have those kinds of experiences. And so here it is. I mean, come on. So I was just looking at that for myself. So I hated school. I think from day one of kindergarten, I hated school. And so, and then my mother died in the fall. So it was for years, I had that exact same experience that you're talking about. This just depression would fall over me. And when I realized that I brought conscious awareness to, I don't have to go to school, it was a marvelous moment of realizing how where I went to, it's kind of like what Pasha was talking about, where I went to in history in order to buy into that story.
Yeah, exactly. And what I get to, as we're talking, kind of the same place Pasha was saying is, I project what he was saying is, we don't even know the experience of lonely. In a sense, I feel like what happens with that is, it's a story around there's something wrong with me, so I should be with other people, rather than I enjoy the company of other people, you know, Fred and Mary and Paul. And so I want to spend time with them. It becomes all about me needing something because there's something wrong with me, not, wow, let's go do this fun thing I always enjoy doing with those people. And then that becomes a double whammy. But
yes,
at least we can see it.
Yes, at least we can see it. Well, and the seeing it, the diagramming it like this, really does give us distance from it. You know, it's never the same once we see through it. So back to Debbie, you know, of realizing I want to do something nice for somebody else or kind or loving or whatever. And there's going to be a little light bulb that lights up that goes, huh, now how are you going to know what that is? And even if we continue to fall for it for a while, because conditioning is so old and so deep and so powerful, there's a little bit more conscious awareness each time. We fall a little, it's not as deep. And so that's how we wear away the karma. It's just getting to see something and then being able to return to that experience over and over and over and over and over until we see every aspect of it and it's gone.
Yes. Or what I saw yesterday, and it just reminds me how grateful I am for practice and for this daily opportunity, is, you know, I had this attitude. I was identified in a certain way. And at some point I just said, you know, I'm not going there. I'm going to make a different choice to turn my attention.
Yes.
And it just took a minute, and there it was. And I was just like, okay, that worked. You know, we just have to keep practicing it till it works and make a different choice.
Exactly so. And to prove to ourselves, as you did, that it does work. And there's nothing, somebody said, I don't know who, nothing succeeds like success.
That's
a perfect example. You prove to yourself that it works. This isn't theory. You know it works. You know you can do it. And you know you can be present enough to hear that little tiny voice say, you don't need to do that. You could make a different choice.
And that's where the being alone is such a blessing in a way, because then we have the opportunity to really be there and hear that, or hear the, you know, hear the opposite and choose not to go there. And just, so yes, thank you, practice.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, practice. And thank you, Greta.
Thank you, Sherry, and thank you, Ashwini.
Thank you, Greta.
Bye.
And that brings us to the end of the show, Sherry, and here is our assignment for the day.
All right.
How do you defend your, I'm sorry, when do you feel defensive? Record and listen.
When do you feel defensive? All right. Oh, that'll be a good one to watch all day, huh? All right. Thank you so much, Ashwini. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Sherry. Take care, everybody,
take care.
And talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Bye-bye.